It wasn't just Andrew Benintendi today. It was JD Martinez, who has gotten hot.
That ball is gone! What a bullet by Devers!
I love to see the exit velocity on that one.
It's a new year, and it is the first edition of the TC and Jerry podcast for 2021. Glad you found us. Glad we're all here, and glad we're talking baseball with the season maybe not too far away. I am Tom Caron. Joining me, as always, is the legendary Rem Dog, Jerry Remy. Jerry, happy New Year. How are you, my friend?
Very good. I'm doing well. How you doing, TC?
Doing okay. How were the holidays? We were talking before we came on, you know, different for everybody, not a lot of fun compared to past years. But part of me feels like I'm glad it's over and we're through it, because I feel like we're getting closer maybe to getting back to some kind of normalcy.
Well, I agree with you. You know, it was very strange. It was different than any other year we've ever had, especially around the holidays. You were unable to get together with, you know, members of the family that you usually get together with. And it was kind of strange, you know, in a way. And I'm with you. I'm glad that all that's going on now, that we're working on vaccines that hopefully we'll all be able to get within the next 3 or 4 months. And we, you know, at that point, hopefully things come back to a sense of normalcy, which we haven't had in a long time. And it's been so long, we kind of forgot how that feels.
It's almost bizarre, isn't it, to think of baseball at Fenway Park and people back in the stands. But you mentioned the vaccine. First of all, how's your health?
Good. Very good.
No problems going well through all of this? No setbacks anywhere?
No setbacks. Nope.
Awesome.
Nope. We're ready to roll.
Now, are you in line? And I haven't asked you this before off camera or anything, but have you heard anything about a vaccine? Like, will you be in line to get one sooner because of your health?
Yeah, I think I will be. And I've talked to the doctors a number of times. And the last time I talked to them, they would have more information for me, probably coming up next week. I don't know what group I would fall under. I would say somewhere in the first group that gets it. I don't know if it'd be phase A, B, or C, but I think it would be in that group because I am battling health issues. Obviously, I'm 68 years old, so I'm over the 65 limit. So I would imagine, yes, that I would probably be in line to get it fairly early, and the earlier the better. If they came over today and said, Jerry, here's your vaccine, let's see your arm, I'd give it to them right away and say, go get them, because I think we're all ready for it.
See, I feel like it would be great for all of us for you to get it, because you're so shy and quiet about things going on in your life. You know, I feel like you'd be the perfect guy to tell us how it felt. If there were any reactions, like, you would tell everybody everything. And so we'll all feel better about getting it ourselves after watching you go through it.
Well, there is a lot of concern out there from a lot of people, but yeah. I have no concern. You know, I know exactly what's going to happen. It's going to be like getting a flu vaccine. You got to have a sore arm the next day, and that's going to be it. You're going to be fine. And, you know, I've been watching closely. Obviously, it's something to catch your attention. And I've been watching the news very, very closely. And, you know, the reactions, there were a couple of reactions in the early stages, the first week they were giving them out. But since that time, we haven't heard anything major at all. Anything's been taking a normal flu vaccine. So I have complete confidence in what they're doing. And, you know, now they've got to get a program together where they can roll this out very quickly so everybody can get it. And, you know, I think they're doing it the right way. I think it's a little slower than they expected. But, hey, who expected a vaccine this soon, really, when you think about it? You know, other vaccines take years and years and years to put together, and this came together in, you know, rather very short period of time. So I think that's why some people have a question about it, but I don't. You know, what have I got to lose? You know, so I'm going for it.
I like a little soreness in the arm, so you won't be able to throw for a couple of days, right? No baseball-related activities for a few days.
I'll skip my bullpen session, yeah.
When's the last time you threw a baseball?
Oh, my God. Probably when I threw out the first pitch and I rolled it up the home plate just about a number of years ago, probably about 3 or 4 years ago, they had a little celebration for me for my 30th year. And I think Vasquez was behind the plate and I had to throw it. And, you know, you get nervous out there when you have to throw that first pitch. It's amazing. And you haven't even done anything for years and years and years. And all you're saying is don't bounce it, don't bounce it, don't bounce it. And then what do? You bounce it. So I bounced it, I think, once time for me. He was able to pick it, of course, and so I didn't look quite as bad. But it's intimidating.
You know, I threw one at Hadlock Field a couple of years ago before the Sea Dogs game, and I was so worried about bouncing it. First of all, I didn't go up on the mound because I wasn't stupid. I stood down on the front, so I wasn't stepping down.
Right.
I got it home because I saw it, but I went back and saw a video of it, and it was absolutely the worst form of anyone who's ever thrown a baseball in their life. Like, I just sort of short-armed this thing like a shot put just to make sure I could get it to him, because I think if you go back and throw, you don't know where it's going because you're all amped up.
No, the one thing you don't want to do is fire it over the head. You're better off bouncing it once than firing it over the head. Yeah, that's when the people really go crazy, you know. So it is an intimidating thing, you know. No matter how many times you've thrown a ball in your life, when you get out there center stage, and it's what pitchers go through every time they go out there to pitch, you know, it's amazing. You kind of feel it. And I'm like you. I never go on the mound with respect to the pitcher because the mound's already made. It's already ready for the game, and I don't want to disrupt that in any way. So I go in front, and, of course, that gives you a better chance of reaching the catcher.
You know what I wasn't ready for, Jerry? And I don't know the last time you threw it at a minor league game is in the minors, they're already on the field. So the pitcher's standing on the mound right behind you.
Yeah.
And it was Mike Schwarren who wound up getting called up later that year. And you know, I did like a Kimbrel kind of a fake, you know, I did the Kimbrel dangling arm and I hear him kind of behind me. Get out of here. It was pretty funny.
Yeah.
All right, so we had a little bit of news yesterday. I think Bob Nightingale, USA Today, was the first guy to report it. Rob Manfred reportedly had a conference call with the teams yesterday, and he said, listen, we'd like to push it back, but it doesn't look like we can because of the contract and the agreement with the players. So get ready for a full season. Spring training is going to open on time. And just like that, Jerry, I don't think any of us expected this. We're 5 weeks away from the start of spring training.
Exactly right. It kind of surprised me a little bit because I thought there'd be a lot more back and forth about when this is going to stop because, you know, I personally was convinced that the owners wanted to push this back as far as they possibly could, get a reasonable season in, you know, get over 100 games in. But I was thinking something like spring training in the month of April and beginning the season in May, you know, just so they can possibly at that point get some people in the stands. But you're right, TC, you know, from the story I read this morning, it sounds like we're going to go on time and you know, 5 weeks away. I mean, that's when it would start. And it seems hard to believe because it seems like we have not had an off season. There hasn't been very much going on at all. There's, you know, been very few trades, some major trades, obviously, with Lindor going over to the Mets and stuff like that. But very, very few free agent signings. You know, teams got a lot of work to do in the next 5 weeks before they head to spring training and get their clubs together. So, you know, we'll see how this works and we'll see what happens between now and obviously the second week of February, whether this holds up. And, you know, I was thinking along the lines like Arizona's a mess right now. Florida's still got problems down there. And I was really concerned about the beginning of spring training. So we'll see what they say. And we'll see as time goes on, but I would expect things to really start to bubble now in the free agent market and with some trades and things like that, now that they know there's a potential date for opening day.
Yeah, how about we start with the rules? Like, we don't even know if there'll be a DH in the National League yet. We're 5 weeks away from spring training.
Right. I think there's going to be an awful lot of back and forth. I think it's going to resemble a little bit like last year, you know, after when they were starting to talk about coming back and everything hit the fan and it was a mess on both sides. And I think we haven't gone through that period yet. I think we are going to go through it. And, you know, it'll be over the rules. It might be over the start of the season. We'll see. But hopefully it goes smoothly. I think baseball fans need that very badly. You know, I think after last year, it was really a lost year for baseball. And especially around here, it was a lost year. And I think anybody that's looking forward to it is looking for a sense of normalcy. They're looking for a regular season. They're looking for, you know, what baseball is. They're looking for some off-season action. I mean, you know, from the Red Sox point of view, we've got to get active. We've got to get people excited about something. And that really hasn't happened yet. So we'll see. We'll see what develops in the next 2 or 3 weeks. It should be, I would expect it to be very interesting.
Sox fans are waiting for the hot stove to heat up a little bit. It's been so cold, but it's all of baseball, right? There's tons of free agents. Yeah. I was looking Major League Baseball trade rumors. I think of their top 30 free agents, only 7 have signed. So,
right.
So most of the big names are still out there. The Red Sox were kind of linked to Tomoyuki Sugano, who didn't sign a deal. He went back to Yomiuri Giants last year, 4-year deal last week, rather. 4-year deal with an opt-out each year so he can do it again next year. Kluber is an interesting guy. Corey Kluber's throwing on Wednesday, everybody watching, but I think a lot of teams are in on him. Red Sox have been linked to him. But two names I wanted to bring up with you because they're still sitting out there, Jerry. Masahiro Tanaka and Jake Odorizzi. Now, the Red Sox have been linked heavily to Odorizzi in a lot of reports. I haven't seen a lot of links with the Red Sox to Tanaka. I think everyone thinks he'll go back to the Yankees, but he hasn't yet. How about one of those two guys, either of those two guys? You've seen them both a lot. What do you think?
Well, I like both guys. I really do. Odorizzi, you know, we saw in Tampa Bay. Of course, in Minnesota, he had some physical problems last year, but hopefully those are by him. He's certainly capable of getting big league hitters out. He knows what he's doing. And we all know Tanaka. I mean, you know, we've seen him many, many times. And I have a hard time believing that he would come here from the Yankees. I don't know. It's just a feeling that I have. But, you know, when you look at the Red Sox right now, you've got E-Rod, hopefully, who's going to be healthy. You'll have more information on that, obviously, at the end of the week.
Sale when he comes back from Tommy John.
Sale when he comes back, you got Eovaldi. So you got three spots, really, you have to fill, and you need that. You know, so you need to have about six, seven, maybe eight starting pitches deep. And we're a long way from that right now. You know, we're not even at five right now. So, you know, you've got a long way to go to fill in the blanks before the season starts, because the last thing you can do is go into a season like last year. And, you know, I'm anxious to see what E-Rod has to say, because, you know, what he says and what he's able to do when it all starts are two different things. You know, it's going to be an experiment for him. It really is. I mean, he may have had the greatest offseason in the world, but the fact is, until he gets back doing what he's doing and do it knowing that he's not going to have any problems, that's the big thing, getting mentally, you know, prepared for this and you know, to know that he physically is going to be fine to go out there and compete. And you've got to remember, he's lost almost a year, so it's going to take him a while to get sharp again. So, you know, we've got to see all these things break down, and we've got to see more starting pitching come into the fold. And I don't worry about the team on the field. I think the team on the field is going to be fine. I really do. I think they're going to score enough runs. I think we're going to see guys that had bad years last year bounce back and be themselves again. So I'm not worried about that. I'm very concerned about the starting pitching and a little bit about the bullpen also. I think that's going to be the main focus for the next, you know, 6 weeks till we get to spring training and even in spring training.
Yeah, and the bullpen, there's a lot of relievers out there. I always feel you can build a bullpen because there's usually guys out there who they don't cost right as much as starters. Hendricks went to Chicago. By the way, the White Sox might be the team to beat in the American League. It's been a long time since we've said that. Trinan went back to the Dodgers. Brad Hand still out there. You've got guys. Alex Colome, he was really good for Tampa Bay and has been really good for the White Sox. Probably cost you some money. But obviously the Tampa Bay connection, we know that Chaim Bloom knows him well, but there's a lot of options for relievers. The thing I wanted to ask you is, do they need a closer?
Could I believe they do.
Yeah,
I believe
they Matt do. Barnes has been the closer, and I think he's okay as a closer, but I think he's one of the best eighth inning guys in baseball.
Yes.
And I think
you're
taking away one of your strengths if you move him to closer. If you get a closer, now Barnes is back in a place where he can be one of the best in all of baseball at that role. And I think that makes you better.
I would totally agree with you 100% on that. You know, I like him much better as a seventh, eighth inning guy, depending on how the lineup folds up in the seventh or the eighth. I like him in that position right there. I think he's one of those guys, and I may be wrong about this, but I think he's one of those guys that is much more comfortable in that role than the closing role. You know, the closing role is so different than any other time because you look behind you, there's nobody warming up. It's your game. You know, it's your game. It's on the line. You win it, you lose it. And that's tough to live with. You know, if you drop one, it's tough to look at your teammates in the face after a game. And, you know, it's tough the next day until you can go back there and get a job complete. In the other role, you can mess up a little bit and still be okay because you still got a couple of at-bats left. You still got a chance to come back in the game. And I think that's where Bond fits in very well. And, you can call him in the seventh inning if you got the three, four, five guys coming up. You can wait till the eighth inning to call him in, and he has that versatility. And I just like him better in that role. I think he's more comfortable in that role. He looks more comfortable in that role. He throws the ball better in that role, I think. And, you know, I think he's just one of those guys that fits that perfectly. So I would prefer to see them use him in that role and then go out and get themselves a guy that is accustomed to coming in at the end of the game and closing out games.
You know, you mentioned that they should have enough offense. I totally agree with you. Two things. One thing I want to hit on quickly is second base. I mean, Christian Arroyo, was probably, he's probably the top guy in the depth chart right now. And he gave you a little something to be interested in for next year. But DJ LeMahieu was hanging out there. And,
I know.
And he said, you know, the Red Sox apparently contacted his people early in the offseason. He wasn't really talking. Now he's told his agent, get a hold of those people who were calling because he's not happy with the way it's gone with the Yankees.
Yeah.
Major League Baseball trade rumors, I think, had him slotting in around a 4-year deal, $17 million a year. It's going to be a lot of money. But this guy won the batting title, 3 gold gloves at second base. Man, you go from being a very good offense to maybe one of the top offenses in the American League. Would you do it? Would you spend the money on LeMahieu?
Absolutely, I would do it. I think he's one of the best players in the game of baseball. You know, I didn't know how good a player he was until he got to the Yankees, because obviously you didn't get a chance to watch him a lot in the National League when he was in Colorado. And this guy can play the game of baseball. And what he does, he keeps innings alive. He makes contact. He sprays the ball all over the ballpark. He's a big kid, you know, really big second baseman, and he's very, very good at it. You imagine an infield with Devers at third, Bogaerts at short, and LeMahieu at second. We don't know about first base yet. That's a pretty darn good infield, both offensively and defensively, too. You know, you're going to be very strong defensively up the middle with LeMahieu and Bogaerts at that position. So, yeah, I'd love to see it. I know he's going to be expensive, but, you know, somewhere along the line, they've got to spend some money, and they've got to be able to get players like that. Now, people say, well, he doesn't hit a lot of home runs, and he hit a lot of home runs at Yankee Stadium because it's so short to the opposite field. So what? He's going to hit you 340. He's going to hit you 340. He's going to score
One of the lowest strikeout rates in all of baseball.
He's a great player. You know, I've been so impressed with him in the time that he's been with the Yankees. It's unbelievable. And if he can play in New York under that kind of pressure, he can play anywhere.
I think it would be so much fun. He can lead off too, so he and Verdugo could kind of take turns. You know, he's a great second baseman, and he's going to play second base, but he can play first base too. He used to play a little bit of first base, so he could actually move around a little bit if you wanted to do some different things. Two other things I want to hit on before we move on topics. One is Jackie Bradley Jr. still hanging out there. Are you surprised, or you think right now he's just part of – I mean, George Springer's still out there. A lot of guys kind of waiting and seeing what the market's going to be set at.
Yeah, I don't think any of them know what it's going to be, you know, and I think that's the problem, why nobody's moved. You know, there hasn't been much movement on either side on, you know, setting the market. And I think once one of them drops, goes somewhere, I think that's when the market gets set and it becomes determined what George Springer's going to make, who's probably going to make the most out of all of them, what Bradley's going to make, what, you know, whether he's going to be in the range that the Red Sox want to spend for him, whether he wants to come back. You know, we don't know the answer to all these questions, but it's been so quiet, it's hard to figure out the market because nobody really has jumped there and signed for big money yet. And once somebody does, then we'll have a better idea. You know, you may get a guy like Springer go somewhere for, you know, a lot of money, maybe to the Mets, whatever it may be. And then you got Jackie hanging out there after him, who's probably be the second choice for center fielders. So where does that put him financially? Where does that put him, you know, and other teams are looking at that too. And I think there's interest in Jackie. I really do, because a lot of teams got enough offense so they can carry him, you know, where they just need a real great defensive center fielder to tighten up their defense. And of course, again, one of the best in the business in Jackie Bradley Jr. So, you know, these are all things that in the next couple of weeks, I think are going to filter out, and it's going to be interesting to see. But I think the first guy to go is going to be Springer. And I think he's going to set the tone for the rest of the free agents.
Now, the other big rumor this week, Jim Bowden, the Athletic, the former GM, local guy here, reported that the Red Sox were actively in talks about trading Andrew Benintendi. And then it came out that the Marlins were a team. There were other teams involved, but the Marlins hadn't been able to work out a deal, but that's where the discussion was. Now, you certainly wouldn't be selling high, right? This guy, only 14 games last year, was injured, just a washout of a year. But even in those 14 games, he had some of the worst offensive numbers in all of Major League Baseball, really historically bad 14 games, but maybe you really can't look at that. So you go back the year before, Jerry, he's down to .266 batting average, .774 OPS, way down from that magical 2018 year. 2017, we all remember, runner up of the rookie of the year. This guy caught all of our attention in 17 and 18. Fred Lynn's name is, he's autographed on that jersey behind me. And we were making comparisons with that great left-handed swing. What's gone wrong with Benny? How do you fix it? And would you trade him, or should the Red Sox keep him?
I have not given up on Ben Attendee yet, and I kind of throw last year out the window. The year before concerns me a little bit more, obviously, than what we saw last year, because, you know, you didn't have time to regroup. He got hurt. He was done for the season. The question I have about Ben Attendee, and I've thought about this often, there are some players that are not made to play here. And I wonder if he's in that category. I don't know. You know, he's a very quiet kid. He doesn't say very much. You wonder if he would thrive more in a lower, you know, an atmosphere that's not as intense as Boston. I wonder that. There are a lot of players that are like that. And I think that may be something the Red Sox may be dangling around right now. Is he a guy that can thrive here? The other mistake I think he made last year was that I read somewhere where he tried to change his swing to get more lift in it. It didn't make any sense to me. When you get a swing like Ben Attendee, it's a beautiful, beautiful swing. It really is. Why mess with that to try to hit more home runs? You're going to hit home runs anyway. He's strong enough. He's got a pretty swing, a beautiful swing, like a Fred Lynn swing. You know, he can hit home runs. And it kind of surprised me when I read that he tried to change his swing. I don't know why you would do that. I know guys are always trying to get better. But, you know, this guy, to me, was already good. And it was just a matter of time before he was going to blossom into something special. And I think that threw him way off last year. And then he got buried so early, knowing it was a 60-game schedule, that it's like all the life was taken out of him. And you know, it's hard to play the game that way. And then, of course, then he got hurt. So I haven't given up on Ben Attendee. You know, I don't think the Red Sox have given up on him. But if there's something out there that's interesting to them, you know, they may be thinking about it. And you've got to think about all possibilities. But sometimes I wonder about, you know, a couple of things. Like, why would you do something like last year? You know, and do you really want to be here in this atmosphere? Do you really? You don't know. You know, only the player knows that. And he may be more comfortable in a place like Atlanta or a place like Miami. Who knows? You know, he might be more comfortable in a place like that. But I think more of last year is a guy tinkering with a swing that really didn't have to and just got off to a bad start and got buried, you know, and then, of course, got hurt. So we'll see how this floats out. But he's, to me, he's still got an immense amount of talent. And I think of him a couple of years ago and, you know, you looked at that outfield and you went, wow, that's some outfield that's going to be around for a long time. And, of course, now it's not going to be around for a long time. So we'll see about him.
You imagine if all three of them are gone? I mean, you might go from 2018, we're talking about it rivaling Evans, Rice, Lynn as the greatest outfield in Red Sox history.
Right.
3 years later, all three of them could be gone.
Exactly.
Right? Mookie's gone, Bradley's a free agent, and they could be trading Ben Attendee. It's really crazy. Okay, before we go now, I want to get to this. The Sox maybe haven't made a lot of news on the player front, but last week they did make history, hiring 29-year-old Bianca Smith as a minor league coach. She becomes the first Black woman to coach in professional baseball. She played softball and club baseball at Dartmouth and has been coaching in the college ranks. Last week, I spoke with her about the opportunity ahead and about the challenges of working with young professional hitters. One of the newest hires of the Red Sox joining us, Bianca Smith, a pioneering hire, first Black woman to be a professional baseball coach. And I know it has been such a whirlwind for you, so many requests. What's it been like to be Bianca Smith over the last couple of weeks?
It's been phone constantly going off every 2 minutes with somebody either saying congratulations, different media requests, and even just following me. I've been joking with my sister. My Twitter followers went from about 500 to almost 3,000 in less than a week. But it's definitely been crazy. I've been trying to embrace it and at the same time, you know, focus on other things. So, but it's great being able to see all the positive comments that I've been getting.
I know you said the Red Sox reached out to you and that came as a surprise, but from that moment on, did it all happen pretty quickly? Take us through that whole process.
It was very quick. It all happened in less than a month. I didn't even get a chance to really tell my parents that I was even talking with the Red Sox. It was just an email asking about, you know, can we speak about opportunities? I spoke with HR for about half an hour a week after that. Then about a week and a half to 2 weeks after that, it was scouting, analytics, player development, and then our field and hitting coordinators in a span of a week. And then like 3 or 4 days after that is when I got the offer. So it was not much time to really wrap my head around the fact that I was even interviewing for a potential position. And then finally getting to tell my parents, and they were blown away because I was like, yeah, so I've been talking with the Red Sox and now I'm going to be coaching with them.
All right. So you went to Dartmouth, you know, you're not a stranger to New England. Your father played football there. Your parents went to Dartmouth. Does that give you any framework of knowledge of what baseball in Boston is like, what New England is like, the passion of Red Sox fans?
I am very aware of it. Yeah. Having been up at Dartmouth for, you know, those 4 years, not to mention, you know, with it being the closest major league team to Dartmouth, we actually went to games. I think I hit Fenway more than any other ballpark for quite a while. We actually used to get free tickets through Dartmouth if you went to the most sporting events. And I was also a former cheerleader. So I was at every football, basketball, hockey, baseball game. So I always got those tickets. And so I'm very aware of the passion that, you know, Red Sox fans have. I've seen it, you know, on Twitter, getting notifications from fans who are excited about this. It's pretty cool.
Now, does the whole family gear up? Are there t-shirts and hats and jerseys being thrown around the Smith family? What's that like?
They're working on it. I did gift them with the Red Sox caps for Christmas. And I think just Tuesday, a new flag for the front of the house arrived. So my parents are putting that out. They're already planning on, you know, getting personalized jerseys once I figure out, you know, my jersey situation, like my number and stuff. But they're super excited. They're ready to put Red Sox gear on. It's going to be definitely an adjustment because we're kind of all over the place as far as, you know, teams in our family, but they're so happy.
You know, I know the organization was really impressed by what they feel is your ability to communicate with hitters in different ways, right? I mean, you have to make the analytics, you have to make the coaching all something that the hitter will consume. And some hitters are more, you know, open to analytics. Others need to be maybe urged that way a little bit. But even the sort of the language of hitting now seems to be changing almost on a yearly basis, right? We're talking about launch angle and swing paths and all these things. And yet so much of it, even though it has new terminology, is a lot of the same fundamental stuff that Ted Williams was talking about in the 50s, right? And Jim Rice, who does the shows with me, talks about now. What is it about that? Where the communication skills that you've been able to bring to the game, is that something you've worked on? Is that something you always sort of felt that you were able to grasp, an ability to sort of translate and explain the game to other people?
I think I've definitely gotten better at it. It's for me, it was more terminology rather than communication itself. Even in grad school, some of my favorite days is we would go to, you know, Indians games, and we would bring, our international students would come with us, and I'd have all of these international students surrounding me at the game, and I'm teaching them the game, just based on what was going on the field. So I've always loved teaching baseball. Like, I love being able to encourage people to get an interest in it and, you know, increase that love of the game. I've been working on teaching my parents, since we are football, soccer, basketball family, but they're starting to pick up on terminology just because of what I teach them. So I think that's certainly helped with the coaching side, is really just learning what term works for our players. Great example, I have a player here at Carroll who, you know, we've been working on, you know, side bend, which, you know, for a lot of coaches, they get that terminology. And it wasn't really clicking with him until one day he goes, oh, you meant tilt. So for him, side bend was physically moving forward rather than actually turning and bending. So I was like, okay, great. So I know for you now, say tilt when I need to work on it. So it's just the term and making sure players understand and figure out which terms work for them.
And when you're talking to broadcasters, always dumb it down. That's my advice. Okay. Just dumb it all down for us. We'll be fine. I know you talked about your degrees and sort of a lot of people thought it was a trajectory towards a front office job. So if you had your way, whatever number of years from now, you're the major league level, you're an established person in this business, this industry, are you a general manager? Are you a manager? Where do you see yourself, on the field or in the front office, if you had your choice?
Right now, definitely still on the field. I want to be a manager. Definitely want to get to that level. I've even joked with people that when I retire, I'm going to be a little league coach. Like, I'm going to be on the field for as long as I can until my body just completely breaks down, and probably even after that. But no, right now, my long-term goal is to eventually become a major league manager.
Couple last things I want to ask you. The young players and you know what we went through yesterday with what happened in Washington. We saw the Celtics, right? Brown, Tatum, a lot of their players have been very upfront. Obviously, we've seen that platform used in multiple sports here over the last few months. You'll be dealing with young players who are becoming professionals for the first time. Do you think that's part of all of this, helping them find their voice and use their platform for what they feel they can do in society?
For sure. To me, it's really no different than working with my players here. They're around the same age. A lot of these guys, it's the first time they're away from home, first time they were away from parents. Like, it, coaching is more than just teaching them the mechanics and what to do on the field. It's helping them off the field as well. It's being there for them in any way that they need. And part of that is, yes, helping them develop their voice, helping them with their platform, figuring out how to navigate that area is something that's just as important to me. That is one of the reasons why I love coaching, is because I get to have an impact on players, not just on the field, but off the field as well.
I want to ask you finally, a little girl watching this right now, a young Black child who maybe feels disenfranchised and that they have to overcome obstacles and hurdles. Here you are, a pioneering young woman in professional baseball now. What do you say to them about following dreams and trying to pursue a goal?
It's going to be hard. I can't say it's going to be easy, because that would be a lie. It's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult. You're going to be challenged, but that's also the fun of it. I mean, when you finally do achieve it, it's so fulfilling. And then you want to keep going. I mean, it's no fun if it's too easy to do. That shouldn't be the point. You should want to challenge yourself, because as you challenge yourself, you're also getting better. So just keep trying. And the worst thing you could do is not even try. At least try and push as hard as you can. And if you do get to a point where you just can't take it anymore, that's fine too. That's not being a failure. Again, the worst thing you can do is just not try at all. But at least, you know, if you're interested in it, try to pursue it and see where it takes you.
Bianca, thank you for the time. Congratulations. I know a lot of people in Hanover and the Upper Valley are going to be real excited when spring training starts and you become part of the Red Sox family. Look forward to seeing you this spring and enjoy the start of this journey.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Jerry, she's an impressive young woman, very well-spoken. When you talk to the Red Sox, they didn't hire her to make history. They hired her because they love her communication, her ability to speak the language of baseball. And they really gave her high marks for being able to use different terms with different players, right? Because that's what this is all about. We're in a weird year where tilt, you heard to talk about, and loft and all that stuff. Some guys buy into it, some guys don't. At the end of the day, to me, a lot of it is you're saying the same things. You're just using different terms to get to the same things, right? A lot of this is still what Ted Williams wrote about in The Science of Hitting 50 years ago, but we're finding new ways to explain it. And really, that's the key to coaching in the modern era, right? Being able to speak the language that the hitter can understand.
Well, you know, she said the right things. You know, first of all, congratulations to her. And she said all the right things. You know, being a good coach at any level of this game, and especially at the level she's going to be working at now, is knowing the individuals the best you possibly can. And her eyes are going to open up when she gets down there, because she's going to be loaded with players. I mean, you know, at that level, all the new young kids are coming in, and you got to evaluate all of those. And the best coaches are the ones that take the ability that you have and bring the best of that ability out to you. The coaches that go in and say, okay, it's this way, we're going to do it this way, and that's it, generally are not that successful. And the ones that are able to listen to the kids, the players, and say to themselves, you know, okay, this is what you want to do. Okay, here's how we're going to try to go about it. And to me, that is the best way to coach. And that's what she sounds like she's going to be able to do. As I said, she's going to have her hands full, because you've got all these new young kids coming in. They're going to be all over the place, scattered all over the place. And it's like mind-boggling when you're in that position. So how can I help all these people? But, you know, you eventually get it down. You narrow it down to how you can do that. But you've got to have an open ear to the player. And when you have an open ear to the player, that's when you can take over as a coach, because you know where he's coming from or she's coming from. And then you're able to work from there, you know. But anybody can say, okay, it's going to be this way, or it's not going to work for you at all. That's not the right way to coach. The right way to coach is just listen to the players talk and then evaluate something from there.
Your coaching career lasted exactly 1 year. You were bench coach, but I think you were the hitting coach as well, right? For New Britain in that one year?
I was everything.
Yeah. Not a big staff in AA.
Yeah. One coach.
Yeah. One thing that doesn't change, though, like you said, these are young guys who think they are going to conquer the world, right? They're all super confident. They're professionals. Their dreams are coming true. They think they're going to go to the majors. What's your advice for Bianca Smith in her early days as she begins this journey coaching professional hitters?
Well, to first of all, be patient. Obviously, you need a ton of patience. You've got to be a very good listener. You've got to be a very good listener to these kids, and you've got to listen to what they have to say, and you keep in the back of your mind things that they did say, and then you drop it back on them a little bit later once you prove to them that you're right and they're not. It's a dance, and it took me a little while to get used to it because I came directly from the big leagues. I knew what it took to play in the big leagues. And the most frustrating part of it for me personally was that the kids that I knew were going to the big leagues, they were going to be there. I knew that. They were a double A. I could tell their talent. They were going to be major league players. They were the most difficult to coach. The easiest ones to coach were the kids that were really struggling to stay at the double A level and move up to triple A. They weren't guaranteed. They weren't high draft choices. They weren't given that big paycheck that guaranteed them a ride to the big leagues. Those were the fun kids to work with because they wanted to be out there at 1 o'clock in the afternoon doing extra things. Some of the guys, not all of them, but some of the guys that knew they were going to be in the big leagues, they were difficult to work with because they had already their mind made up that whatever worked for them in high school or worked for them in college was going to work for them at the major league level. And I'm going to tell you something, it doesn't. But that's one thing you've got to get used to. Coming from the big leagues to a minor league team like that, it was very difficult for me to get used to those guys. You could see that what they were doing was not going to work at the big leagues, but you couldn't tell them that. You had to listen to what they had to say and go, yep, and then try to guide them in the right direction, And that's all I could say to her is, you listen to what they had to say and you try to guide them in the right direction.
All right, good advice. Again, congratulations to Bianca Smith. Looking forward to seeing her in action down in Fort Myers before too long, maybe just a few weeks from now, the way it looks.
She'll be the only one with more media around her than you.
Yeah. I don't think that's a problem. Yeah, it'll be Shades of Daisuke. There's going to be Kevin Gregg of the Red Sox media relations said the most requests he has ever dealt with in his professional career because it's such a great story that people around the country, media outlets around the country have been reaching out to get interviews with her. And she's handled it well. It's not easy to talk to jamokes like me day after day after day. And she's doing a great job with it. So, and there'll be a lot more, as you said, to come. So, Jerry, that's it. We got one in the books. First one of 2021. Good to see you. Happy New Year.
Same to you, and I'm sure we'll have a lot more next time we talk.
It'll be ramping up, no doubt about it, as we get closer to baseball. So we'll talk to you next week. Eduardo Rodriguez is going to join us next week. That'll be a great conversation to hear about his journey back from COVID and myocarditis. They need him next year. Getting closer to baseball, that's Jerry Remy. I'm Tom Caron. We'll see you next week on the TC and Jerry podcast.